Punters and dribblers, as always, we're brought to you by the greatest multivitamin ever conceived by man, Good Day. Now, the reviews continue to flow in thick and fast.
Have you got that one from the other day?
Yeah, can I read it out?
Yeah, read it out.
It's so good. It's actually fucking unbelievable. What has been really nice, Tom and I were reflecting on this the other day, is just how much people are finding it
beneficial to their
massively
life.
Beneficial to their life. I know that at the start there would have been a lot of cynics out there going, these cunts are full of shit, they don't know what they're doing, and you couldn't be more wrong, which just brings joy to my little heart and my little soul. Now I want to get up this absolutely elite review,
and we do appreciate the reviews, obviously. Look, it's like the feedback is positive, so that's good. But just being able to hear how it's helping you and the different ways you're seeing benefits helps us know, I guess, the most tangible. Cause there's like tangible benefits and there's intangible ones, like energy, for example. You can feel an improvement in your daily energy, whereas then there's like nutritional benefits like liver health or your fucking immunity generally being boosted. Those are ones where you don't really notice that until maybe you're on it for a while, and you say you've got two young children in daycare who come home sick as fuck, and then you just don't seem to be getting sick where you used to get sick.
Life-changing. 5 stars. Big fan of Hello Sports, so my viewers are always going to be biased. I actually bought it for my wife. Didn't mention who it was by and just let her see how it went for her. Mum of 3 kids and runs her own busy business while I also work 7 on 7 off away. After 3 days, she was hooked. Improved late in the day fatigue and mood. Come day 7, she had forgot to take her Good Day. Her mother was visiting and said the wrong thing and she snapped. Instantly says, I'm sorry, I haven't had my Good Day. Next thing, the mum-in-law is now tasting it and they're walking around the house like they both just discovered fire and were the only ones to know about it. Good result. Even got some alone time with the added less fatigue. With her, not her mum. That would be weird. But a look into the future, I suppose. So it's out there working its ass off, which is fucking terrific. There are downsides to being the fastest selling multivitamin of all time.
Yeah.
And that's that in the last month in particular, sales have just gone fucking through the roof,
which we love.
Tripled, I think, Tom. So we basically got caught with our pants down a little bit and not enough stock on hand.
Yeah, pants down, cold, little doodles.
It won't happen again. That's a Hello Sport promise. However, we are likely to sell out in the next probably 4 or 5 days, roughly. We will have stock for those with subscriptions.
Yep.
So you will never miss out. If you're a subscriber, you're good. If you are a new subscriber as of when we sell out, or you're a new customer, you won't be able to purchase. Well, you can purchase it, but it won't arrive for about 3 weeks.
Yes. So from here, if you start subscribing, you basically just locking it in so that when it lands, then you're good to go and you're straight back on the train.
So you'll know, Punters and Dribblers, we'll do a bit of a thing on the Instagram when we do a sellout, and you'll notice on the website it'll flick from buy now to pre-order.
Yeah.
So that'll be the difference.
Listen, it's not ideal, but it also really just means that it's been successful beyond our wildest imagination, and you just couldn't have planned for it to go as well so quickly. So we're fucking horny for that. We got more as soon as we financially could, we fucking ordered more. And it's just the way that it goes, the production, again, when you're getting primo quality shit, it takes time.
And it's got to be tested multiple times. There's a bit of a process. We've sped it up as much as we can. It is what it is, punters and dribblers. Bear with us. So we'll let you know when it sells out. But again, it'll be sometime this week. Again, and subscribers,
dude,
you're all good.
It's funny.
You're all good.
We've been looking at it going, geez, we might have a couple of days here where we don't have any. We'll see. But, you know, we should be all right. And then just each day it keeps growing. And there's like, obviously you're fucking pumped for that. But then you go, oh, shit, it might actually be a little bit more. Maybe it's going to be a week where we won't have any. And you're like, oh, fuck, maybe it's going to be 2 weeks. Then on the weekend, Eddie's like, it could sell out within days. I'm like, oh, my God. God, fuck. Yes, great. Thank you all. But also, fuck.
Yep. So subscribers, you're good. We'll let you know when it sells out, and fucking good on you.
Get the fucking pre-order in though. It's clearly good shit. You don't want to miss it. Just become a subscriber and then you're fucking good to go.
BeGoodHealth.com.au, code Dribblers for 20% off.
You are listening to the Hello Sport Podcast.
What is up, punters and dribblers? Welcome back to another episode of All Talk with your old pals, Tom and Eddie from the Hello Sport Podcast. We are here with you on the SEN airwaves, back for another rip snorter of an interview with, I'll give you a clue.
What clue are you going to be?
Well,
Hairy Arms.
All-time, Hairy Arms.
That's a clue.
All-time great captain.
Most centuries for Australia ever.
Still hasn't offered us up a greyhound pooch to purchase.
Tasmanian.
You getting it?
Am I ringing any bells?
Ringing any bells?
Name starts with R. Ends in ing.
Yeah. Nickname.
RP. You still not getting it?
Nickname. Might be Punter. Punters and Dribblers.
Yeah. I'll give you a nickname. His nickname is Punter or Dribbler.
Yeah.
And he played cricket.
So.
Any more?
If you don't want it to spoil, block your ears now. But he's coming up right now anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
the powerful Ricky Ponting. Mate, big summer coming up. You must be jam-packed.
Yeah, I've been pretty busy already, actually. I think I've done 4 of the 5 Big Bash games have been played already. Mm. So flew back into Melbourne from Launceston this morning and then off to Perth tomorrow for the start of the Test Series. So
crazy schedule. Your wife must be very forgiving, giving the summer schedule. She must be used to it though now, I guess.
Yeah, no, she's used to it. That's probably where I got lucky that when we met, I was obviously on the road a lot and playing a lot. So both her and all the kids sort of only know one way, that dad's away a bit of the year. I mean, this year's been a bit of an exception, really, with, you know, IPL, World Test Championship, Ashes, World Cup, all in the same year. It's been a lot more time away than normal, but it's been fun though as well.
There's a part of it where it feels like the cricket calendar generally, and obviously the Ashes is not every single year, but just like it's getting more and more jam-packed. Like every year it seems like we're sort of going like, oh, it's been a busy year, but it almost is becoming the norm.
Yeah, that's probably pretty fair. I mean, it's probably because you're sort of following a lot of the star players around as well, right? A lot of the bigger name players now are playing, you know, more and more tournaments every year. It's not just the international stuff, but, you know, with IPLs popping up and, you know, Major League Cricket and all these other big events that are happening, the modern player, probably more so the modern player that's coming towards the end of their international career is playing, you know, probably a lot more than ever before. And we talk about the Aussie boys, but the Indian guys play more than anyone else. I mean, they play a serious amount of cricket. So yeah, it's been a big 12 months already for the Aussie guys. As I said, the Test summer's about to start. Then they go to New Zealand after that, and the IPL rolls around and the T20 World Cup straight after that. So, you know, you talk about it being a busy year. Well, it's just starting.
It's almost like a busy life. I remember we spoke to, I think it was Dave Warner at the start of the year, and he was like, oh, you know, we're heading to India and then I'm not home till November and like all the different things in between. And then as you say, it's back and then it's Australian summer and then it's New Zealand and then it's like, it is almost like your career starts and then you're basically on planes until you retire.
Exactly right.
Yeah, it's pretty much, even when I was playing, it was about 11 months of the year out of your own home then. I mean, that's 10 or 11 years ago. So, and that was without me playing much, you know, IPL or any of these other tournaments happening around the world. Because even you think about the Australian summer, you know, say you live in Melbourne like I do now, or you live in Sydney, you only have the one test match and probably one day in your home state for the entire summer. And the summer sort of, you know, middle of November through until, you know, early March. So, you know, through that period, you've only got sort of a week and a half probably in your own home.
Was it difficult being on the road with the boys for that long? Like, were there ever moments where you had to just go for a nice long walk and just get away from someone?
Yeah. I mean, it is a long time, you know, and Ashes tour when I first started. So my first Ashes tour in 97 was about 4 months away with the same group of guys. And you know, it's been well documented maybe over the last few weeks that not everyone sees eye to eye, not everyone's on all the time. But to be honest, I mean, a lot of the teams that I played, you know, I think it was one of the great strengths of those teams was how close the guys were. And, you know, it wasn't, you could have dinner with a different bloke most nights and still have a pretty good time. But you still need, you know, you still need your own time. And people, you know, even with me now, you know, in a period like this where I've, you know, been away a lot and travelled a lot, I love just to be able to sit at home on a Friday night and be on the couch and not have to worry about, you know, making small talk or talking to people, because I sort of feels like I spend most of my life sort of doing that, talking, and I'm not a great talker at the best of times. And, you know, my wife and I are pretty private people. So, yeah, I do enjoy that time, whether it's just going for a walk or grabbing the dog or, you know, being on the golf course for a day, a week or whatever. It's important you've got your own time as well.
What are you watching on the couch, if I can ask you to share some private information?
No, look, it's sport for me. Like, everyone asks me all the time, oh, have you watched this, have you watched that? And I'm like, I'm just forever saying no. It's, you know, if the golf's on or the footy's on or the racing channel's on, that just about does me, mate. So, and even with that, I mean, that's sort of late night stuff as well. By the time you've got, you know, I've got three kids, obviously 15-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl, 9-year-old boy. And by the time we've got them sort of done and away at night, because I've been away a lot, then I'll get a few hours to myself on the couch, and it's normally just sport time for me.
Good answer. Yeah. We've got the first test starting on Thursday. This is coming out the week after the first test will have finished, but just to talk generally about Pakistan coming up, I think I saw something the other day about you. I think it was a quote from yourself about how last time Pakistan came here, you said it was the worst bowling attack to ever tour Australia, but then you retracted that. And you've sort of applied that. You've applied that now to this current group of touring Pakistan bowlers. Is that correct?
I mean, you guys are no better than that. Don't believe everything you read. I don't know who it was. Someone went after me for a couple of weeks there on Instagram or Twitter or whatever it was, because there was another quote for me attributed to all the millions and billions of dollars that the BCCI are spending on their cricket and changing venues for World Cup. And it was all these quotes that were just made up for me. And that Pakistan bowling attack one was another one. So someone had it in for me, but I might have said it last time, because that attack they did bring out here in the last series was way below the expectation that you have for a Pakistani fast bowling brigade. You know, that's one thing that they've probably always prided themselves on over the years is their quality and their depth of their fast bowling, and it just wasn't on display last time here in Australia. I mean, Afridi was here last time, but they had a young Nassim Shah just making his debut in that series, and the other guys they brought were, you know, what I felt at that stage, well below test quality and test standard. But, and look, the disappointing thing, I think, for Pakistan in this series is Harris Ralph not being there, you know, deciding to pull himself out of this tour to play in the Big Bash. It's great for the Big Bash, but it doesn't send a great message to Pakistan or to world test cricket, to be honest, that one of your star players chooses a domestic comp over representing your country.
Is there an element with that where you've kind of got Australian cricket like cannibalizing its own product a little bit, where you've got like the Big Bash taking a player out of the summer? Like, is there something there where there should be something in place to stop that from happening, or is it sort of you can't help it?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, to be totally honest, it's been the one negative against the Big Bash from its inception is that we don't get to, the internationals, we don't get to see our best Australian players playing in the Big Bash because they run simultaneous alongside the Australian Test summer. So, you know, for the Big Bash to ever perform it at its optimum and be the best it could ever be, you want to see as many of the Australian players playing in that comp. And, you know, we saw evidence of that last year at the end of the test summer last year, when, you know, guys like Steve Smith could come back into the Big Bash, you know, what impact that had on the tournament. Crowds at the ground went up, you know, viewership at home went up, and the tournament all of a sudden got a bit of a buzz back around it again because the best Australian players were playing. So, I guess, you know, I mean, you don't want to see that, but, it's probably a bit of a reflection on the modern game more than anything. You know, with the amount of money that's around now in these domestic comps, and I've said it for years, you know, I'm really worried about the West Indies with their cricket and, you know, some of these other smaller countries where their national contracts, are probably a tenth maybe 10% of what they can make when, you know, for an IPL contract or something like that. So it becomes when you're a professional player and you've got such a short lifespan in the game, you can understand why some of these players are making those decisions.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. Obviously, they've moved the start of the test summer because of the World Cup, which then, I guess, even exacerbates the issue around test player eligibility for the Big Bash. In a perfect world, where would you be putting the Big Bash so that we can see the throbbers of Australian cricket playing test and Big Bash? Like, is there an answer?
There's probably not. I mean, it's easy to say to play the whole thing before the Australian summer, you know, but then you're sort of dealing with weather. And like, let's say you looked at September, October, something like that, try and get it done then. But generally, the Australian team will be overseas at that stage anyway, playing another tournament somewhere. So it's hard to get the Australians in there. You say at the end of the summer, you know, you can't have it really at the end of the summer, because that sort of rolls into an IPL period as well, when a lot of the Australian players will be wanting to go and play over there. I'm not sure what the right answer is. I think what they've tried to be able to do this year is, and what they'll continue to do, is just condense the tournament down a little bit. You know, it's gone from 14 games the last couple of years down to 10 games this year, which, you know, makes it more attractive for overseas players to come as well, because they feel like they're not missing bigger chunks of other tournaments, and they're also not, you know, in Australia for too long. I mean, it's not saying there's anything wrong with being in Australia for too long, but especially through that time of year. But I know that that's been one of the negatives from some of the better international players coming to Australia, has just been the length of the Big Bash. But they've turned that around this year, which I think it will be good. And the other thing, by shortening it, means that, you know, the finals of the BBL this year are actually in the school holiday period, which is where, you know, and then you can let the kids go and enjoy the best of the best in the Big Bash. Mm.
Do you like the fact that there's going to be more tests in January? Like, is that do you think that's good, or do you prefer? We were discussing before we jumped on here, like, I'd sort of forgotten that we usually would have had a test by now that's already been played, at least. But I haven't found myself too put out by that, and that could obviously be for the World Cup. But Doug, how do you see the way it's gone this year generally?
Well, it's been fine for me, because I was actually away in India for that month, for the back half of the World Cup, and then, you know, only home for a sort of a week and a half, and then I'm rolling straight into the Big Bash. So it's, for me personally, this year it's worked fine. And it's a one-off year as well, this one, with the World Cup just having been where it was. And I think next summer we've got India in Australia, which will be five tests. So I'm against India, so I reckon that'll probably roll back into the normal sort of starting time, which would be sort of late November, get a couple of games in before the Boxing Day test, and then finish in Sydney like we historically and traditionally have. So I found it okay this year, but the traditionalists will be the ones probably to ask more about how they felt around the summer.
Punters and Dribblers, we are brought to you by Neds. They are the betting platform of choice here at Hello Sport. Now, you can follow along all of our bets in the About Even private group on the Neds app. You can also follow our profiles. As I've been saying, my civilian bets are where I seem to be doing my best work. My About Even bets starting to improve. I can feel myself starting to improve. I did hit two on the weekend.
After back-to-back triple staked losses.
The triple staked losses for Unit Scoopers have absolutely cut to fucking the Tiger King. I may never recover from this, but the civilian bets is where you can see me getting to my work, and that is on the profiles.
Good for you, Tommy. Ned's best in the business. Come join along. Join our About Even group if you'd like as well.
Eddie, you're just repeating me now, are you?
I didn't hear you say that.
You just, where were you? Where were you?
Pixies.
Where were you, mate?
Pixies.
Full Pixie stuff. So now you're just going to say, you're going to talk about the fucking profiles tab as well? You're going to talk about the About Even group? Yeah?
About Even group.
Yeah, how do you get in there?
That's what I said, Code Dribblers.
Oh, okay, there you go, good. Yeah. What's this ad for again?
Neds.
Oh, yeah, great point. Glad you're listening. Pixies. Pixie Simps. Shout out to Neds. We love you, Neds. We love you. Go Manly.
Now, you win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Punters and Dribblers, there's 2 days left to be in the chance to play golf be in the chance, be in with the chance to play golf at Shorty's with myself and Eddie. Buy a six-pack of Big Day Rosé at harlowsport.shop. You will go in the running. We pick two winners from the month of April. But what are we doing month of May? Because we are working our way through the remainder of the most recent vintage. Got a couple left that we want to get rid of before we then turn all of our attention to the end of the year.
Just feeling generous, Tom.
We're feeling generous, and it's sale time.
We just thought, fuck it. If you buy a case and you use the code Manly, you get $50 off the case. If you buy two cases, you get $100 off.
Yep.
You get what I'm trying to say? Go to harlowsport.shop, bang, rosé on there, code Manly, $50 off a case. Pretty fucking generous if you ask me. But we love the punter and we love the dribbler. And we're just like, let's get this vintage out there to the people that want it most.
Let's get it in the gullets of the nation.
That's right. Gullet up. There's been a lot said in the media around Mitch Johnson's comments in regards to David Warner's retirement, his impending retirement. And he was sort of the opinion that he hasn't warranted selection and in so facto hasn't warranted a swung song sort of test series, so to speak. Like, how do you sort of feel about ex-players going that hard in the paint?
Soundbite time, Ricky. Soundbite. We're going to clip this up. This thing's going to go. Well, this is going to make
in regards to people they played, you know, a fair bit of cricket with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been asked this a lot over the last couple of weeks. You know, having been on TV most nights and trying to promote the game and the BBL like I have. You know, I think some of the things Mitch had to say had a lot of merit. David hasn't set the world on fire as far as Test cricket is concerned for the last few years. And if you have a really deep dive into the stats will back that up. But there's a way you can get those messages across as well without probably going to the point of saying some of the things that Mitch had to say. And at the end of the day as well, David is hoping and wishing to be able to have that fairy tale ending in Sydney. I don't think it's guaranteed, and he's been told that that's definitely going to happen. I think the ball ends up being in his court now as to how well he plays in the first couple of test matches. You know, there was talk, and remember when this stemmed back to his selection in the Ashes squad. In the middle of the year, and with Candace working in the media as well, she got sort of put on the spot and it just all turned into something that it probably shouldn't have turned into. And, you know, as I said the other day, it probably could have been, well, I know for a fact that Mitch reached out to Davey, I think, tried to call him and tried to have a chat when this initially started, and that didn't happen. And I think if that had have happened then, you know, a lot of this might have been put to bed. I think the guys would have been able to sort out the differences that they had, rather, you know, face-to-face or over a phone call rather than trying to do it in the media, which is not good for anybody. So, I think that's how I would sort of sum up what's happened over the last few weeks.
It's funny. So the friends of the show that you also know, the great cricketer, I was listening to them yesterday and they actually just brought up something which had just sort of, I guess, so I didn't remember exactly how David phrased it back when he was speaking about ideally wanting to finish in Sydney. The language around it all was not like, I'm going to retire in Sydney. It was like, if I'm playing well, if I'm scoring runs, like it was far less presumptuous than I think we all now just think it was. It was actually like, his words were very much like, if I'm playing well, if I'm scoring runs, then that would be a nice way to do it. So it's funny the way that it's now sort of that we all perceive it. Are you hyper aware of the way you, or of what you say when you're trying to hand out critiques of players generally, but I guess specifically ones that maybe you played with or that you know that you've got a close relationship with, like, cause I guess that the Mitchell Johnson one is an example of someone maybe just going a little too hard.
Yeah, but I mean that he ended up going as hard as he did because of the personal nature from where it started before. So there was some personal stuff on the back of what happened in, I don't even know when that test squad was picked, would have been May or June, somewhere, wouldn't it, before the guys went away to the Ashes. So it sort of stems back that far, and the issues weren't dealt with then. So this has been simmering along and bubbling along. And, you know, when Mitch got an opportunity to be able to say something and almost retaliate in a certain way, that's what happened. But, yeah, look, I am very aware because, you know, I'm commentating on a lot of good mates, a lot of guys that I played with, a lot of guys that I've now coached, whether it be in the IPL or I've worked with the Australian team in a couple of big tournaments as well. And, you know, one day you're working with them, the next day you're sitting up in the commentary box having to critique the way that they're playing or the way you think they're going about their cricket. And it's not easy, you know. One that I'll bring up is, you know, with Marcus Stoinis at the back end of the World Cup. You know, I'm sitting in the commentary box in India and, you know, there was talk around who Australia will go with in the, you know, the back end of the tournament, whether will it be Manus Labuschagne or will it be Marcus Stoinis? And Ian Bishop sort of put me on the spot and said, you know, what would you do? Who would you pick? And I've been sort of watching and obviously I watched the game very closely and I've been looking at how the Australian players, how the captain and coach were using certain players in that side. And I sort of said, because I whenever I make a judgment, I want to do it like that it makes, like I think I'm going to be right with what I say, right? Yeah. So he asked me that question and I said, well, I think, you know, the way it's going, I think that they'll pick Labuschagne, you know, ahead of Stoinis. And Stoinis, Marcus, is one of my best mates. Mm. Out of the game of cricket, we talk regularly and talk about all things cricket and all things life. And I was put on the spot and asked that question. And because I felt that they would actually go ahead and pick Marcus, I said that. So it made my, you know, made me look like I had the right idea of what was going on in the game. And then when you go and interact with the team a couple of days later, you can feel the boys, the players know when you've said something, and you get that bit of a feeling from them. And it's awkward, but at the same time, I've got a job to do, and I want to be making sure that I'm doing the best job that I can do. And sometimes, unfortunately, you are going to upset people. But I think if you find the right way to get your message across, you know, it doesn't have to be out and out personal stuff. You can be on the money and be correct and smart and still do it in a way that doesn't offend.
Yeah. You talking about being right in terms of things you're calling for, and like there was a couple of moments during the World Cup, specifically one that comes to mind, but I remember thinking it a few times hearing you in commentary where you whenever Travis Head took those two wickets and you were just like, you're like, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing them bring on Travis Head at some point here, or there's something to that effect. And then within like 5 minutes, they brought him on and he takes two wickets. Are you sort of like sitting up there, like, you know, quietly fist pumping? Is it hard not to almost pat yourself on the back mid commentary, being like, called it?
Oh, I wish there was a camera on me at the time. Because I think he bowled the next over after I called. Finchie was beside me. I think the over before that, I'd sort of tapped him on the leg. Because the thing when you're working with someone like Finchie as well, both being captains, we're looking at the game when we're commentating it like a captain would look at the game. So I tapped him on the leg the over before and said, mate, you know what, it's time for Travis. Like they're not playing Maxi well, the two batters. And it was Klaassen and David Miller, I reckon it was. David Miller in the semi-final. And they weren't playing Maxwell well, and they were playing Zampa really well and scoring heavily off him. And I thought, well, the other right-arm off-spinner they've got in the side is Travis. Mm. So I tapped Finch on the leg and said, look, Nick, I'm actually going to call this next over. So I said, right, it's time to get Travis into the attack. And I backed it up with, you know, we know what it's like, Finch. You know, when they bring a more part-time bowler on, you can just relax a little bit and not concentrate as much as you need to, and quite often that can be the little break in concentration that leads to a wicket. I think Klaassen pulled him for four first ball and then missed a straight one second ball that went on and cannoned into the stumps. And then big Marco Jansen came out and Trav hit him on the pad first ball. And he had two wickets in his first three balls. And as I said, but that's where you need the camera, right? Because I was sitting back in the seat like having finally got one right.
Nice. You, you've obviously spent a fair bit of time with the boys. You say you've worked with them. You know them well. Obviously, the start of the World Cup was, you know, panic stations in a big way. Were you surprised with the way they were able to turn that around and then obviously go on to win the damn thing? Like, was that a shock to you, or knowing them as well as you know them, were you confident that they could do that?
I was actually more shocked the way they started. I wasn't surprised that they made it to the semi-finals and won, because I actually tipped that final before. I tipped Australia-India final before the World Cup started. But when I watched them play their first two games, I was shocked at how badly they had played. Mm. And it wasn't just that. It was, you know, they'd been to South Africa as well. They won the first two games there. They lost the last three. They then had that series against India where things didn't really go to plan. They had a few injuries. They were sort of mixing their batting order around here and there. You know, Cummins hadn't been there. Steve Smith hadn't been there. So there were lots of things that were sort of going on around that group where it sort of felt like it was a bit unorganized is not the right word, but they just hadn't been able to get all their ducks in a row, I guess, coming into the World Cup. And then they started sloppily. And, you know, the one thing that I think all of us that have played a fair bit of cricket for Australia identify quickly is when Australian teams aren't fielding well, then that's generally a bad sign, because it's always one thing Australia prided themselves on. And I've never ever seen a champion cricket team that's not a great fielding team. And, you know, Australia at the start of that World Cup were particularly sloppy in the field. And you know, I think, and they'll say it, they actually felt really like quite tired after the first couple of games, having done the amount of travel they had, having played in South Africa and India immediately before the World Cup. And I think it just took those couple of losses. And let's remember the third game they played as well, against having lost the first two games, Sri Lanka was something like 1 for 160 as well at the start of that game. That could have well and truly got out of hand, and that might have been World Cup over. But so, look, I was surprised how they started, but I had a feeling, you know, I knew they'd beat South Africa in the final, in the semi-final, and I just had a feeling about them in the final as well. And there's two things that happen in those finals. Australian teams definitely raise themselves to another level in those big games. And I think other teams think that Australian teams are going to play at a level higher than they have and therefore try and elevate themselves and can't do it to the level that Australia can. And I think that's probably – I think India outthought themselves in the final with the wicket preparation the way it was and certainly the way they handled their bowlers at the start of their bowling innings. So I think Australia handled the situation better than India.
We just as a nation have an insatiable appetite for World Cups, though, don't we? It's ridiculous how well we are, how much better we are than the rest of the planet.
And we rise.
And we rise to the occasion. But it just, I mean, it was a shock, though. Even like, it was a shock and it reminded me to never doubt that we're going to win the World Cup. Just always assume we're going to win it.
Never bet against Australia, mate.
No. So back to the summer of cricket here in Australia, and just quickly back to, not to the Warner saga, but just the fact that he is obviously coming, his time in the saddle, as it were, is coming to an end. There's so many different potential replacements for him. People, you know, there's your Bancrofts, Marcus Harris, Mitch Marsh, heard Cam Green was even thrown in there at one point. I guess, what are your thoughts around this? And then also, Will Pukowski, where's he at?
Well, there's a few good questions sort of thrown up in that. I'm not in the juggling the batting order around to try and find a spot for someone. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Marnus potentially going up and opening the batting so Green can come in and slot in at number four. You know, there's been talk about Mitchell Marsh going up and opening the batting so Green can come back into that number six slot. I just think it's time that we learn more about some of these openers. I mean, Marcus Harris has had a pretty good run at it, 20-odd tests or whatever it is for him at an average of, you know, maybe 20, around 20. Matt Renshaw is the other name that sort of been
Renshaw,
in there.
Yeah.
He's been the spare batter. He got 100, obviously, in that Prime Minister's 11 game as well, so it puts his name back up again. But I actually feel that Bancroft is the one that's done enough most recently to get crack at it. He's an opening batsman where the other guys aren't. I think he deserves that chance to have another crack at opening the batting in Test cricket. And what that unfortunately means, and so I'll back that up with some other ideas around the reasons why. Labuschagne's probably been the best number three batsman in world cricket for the last two or three years. So why move him? Steve Smith's record speaks for itself at number four. So why would you move him up to three if Labuschagne goes up? A lot of the success that this Australian team has been based around Labuschagne and Smith's partnerships at three and four. Travis Head's emergence at number five has been pretty incredible. And Mitchell Marsh back in the team at number six. We know what he can do. So I'm not moving any of those guys if there's someone that's, you know, that's good enough to open. And I think Bancroft is a better player now than he was when he went out of the side. And I think he deserves the next crack. Which unfortunately means that that Cameron Green, you know, as highly talented as he is, might just have to sit back and wait his turn for a while, which, you know, we've all been there. I was dropped as much as anybody early in my career. And, you know, every time you get dropped, I guarantee you'll come back a better and stronger person and stronger player. And that might just mean that's what's going to happen with Cameron Green.
When you reflect on David Warner's career, as Tom said, it's obviously coming to an end in the next couple of tests. Where do you sort of see him fitting into the makeup of great Australian players and great Australian batsmen? Sort of, where do you sort of see him fitting into that tapestry?
Well, I think he's one of our. Well, it's probably hard to argue that he's probably our best all format player. You know, if you combine T20 one days and tests over the longevity of his career, it's probably hard to find anyone that's had the same success as he has across the formats, you know. And you look at his one-day career in isolation, his World Cup record in itself is outstanding. So, yeah, I mean, he'll be thought about and talked about right up there with the very best openers in across all formats that Australia's produced, for sure.
His World Cup record is outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah,
he was going for it. Where are we? So I wanted to get an update on Ponting Wines. Where's it at? Because the last time, I don't know if you remember, we had a waiter in here, our producer Dave. He was in a tux. He was bringing us wines, sampling all of the goodies. It's a little too early in the day probably for us to be able to get stuck in, but yeah. Ponting Wines, never obviously best in class. How's it all going?
Yeah, no, look. Don't say it's ever too early for a glass of wine. You know, when you're in the middle of a busy summer, you've got a couple of hours at home by yourself in the afternoon, it mightn't be too far away from me to Savo. Once I go and get the young bloke, go and pick the young bloke up from his cricket camp, then it might be time to knock the top off a bottle. But no, look, it's it must be a couple of years now since we've spoken. So we're almost 4 years into this little startup business of ours now, And look, it's been so much fun. It's not easy, I can tell you. Starting up a new business and in, you know, the current sort of economic times is not an easy thing to do. And when you're sort of entering such a big industry as the Australian wine industry, it's competitive and it's hard work. And I think Rihanna and I have sort of realised that you have to be working hard on this business 24/7 to keep making good solid roads and good impact into the market. And that's been a learning curve for us. I mean, the business is chugging along really nicely. We still need to get a bit more exposure. You know, we need to keep pushing the brand out there more. You know, one of the biggest things we've actually found, and I probably said this to you guys a couple of years ago, is people still probably don't, they see the name on the bottle, but still probably don't really understand that it's our business, you know, because there've been other, I don't want to say I'm a celebrity, but celebrity brands out there in the past that sort of haven't been that. You know, people have put their name on a bottle and not actually owned the business, where for us, this is, you know, this is our business. We own the majority, Rihanna and I own the majority of the business and are working on a daily basis to make the business the best that it can possibly be. So, look, we've got some really, really interesting and exciting things happening at the moment, a bit of export into the UK and India and a few other countries as well, which has been you know, once again, hard work to establish, but once those things are up and running really well, then that, you know, that'll be a nice little extra arm to the business. But you know, we're still working on a daily basis to get everything right domestically, as far as retail and distribution is concerned. But you know, you guys worked your way through a bit of the range last time, and
we did, yeah, we did,
and yeah, we I think we've got 11 wines in the range now, sort of across Tasmania and South Australia, and. Look, we're ultra proud of what we've been able to achieve in a short time. And as I said, with a bit more hard work and promotion and people talking about the brand and sampling the wines, then we know that it can grow and grow pretty quickly.
It looks obviously very nice, the bottle and all the different sort of I've lost my words as to how
– Narratives,
stories. And you're saying, you know, that sometimes people don't attribute that it's actually your wine. Have you ever just thought of sticking your face on there, just like a big sticker, removing all those nice –
Mate, it's hard enough to sell it with a name on it, let alone putting my dial on the bottle. I mean, even to back up what you're saying there, like we've done, you know, wine shows all over Australia the last 3 or 4 years. And even in my home state, I go down to Tassie and do a wine show in Launceston and a wine show in Hobart, and I'm standing there behind the stall – you know, pouring wines out to people, and they'll actually walk up and say, "Oh, is it? What are you doing here? Is this? It is actually yours." I'm like, Yeah, if there was one place in the world I thought people might understand it, it might have been Tassie. But so there are some of the challenges that you face. But no, look, if it got to the point of putting anyone's face on it, I think I'd probably still more if I put Rihanna's face on it than mine.
How's it been going in India? Do you find you are they a wine drinking nation? Obviously, parts of it is Muslim or they're sort of alcohol free. But is that, do you sort of see that as Ponting Wines having a big future over there?
Yeah, well, it's one thing that was actually overlooked with the World Cup scheduling. It hasn't been talked about enough. Like, if you want to beat Australia in a World Cup final, you're going to play it in a dry state, right? The World Cup final was played in Ahmedabad, Gujarat, which is a dry state. So the Aussie boys couldn't have a beer leading into the final. Yeah. That's good. They might have found a way to have a couple after the final.
I was going to say.
But yeah, in India, it's the same thing. Like it's but the thing there, the size of the market is astronomical. So you know, historically, Indians are bigger Scotch whiskey drinkers than anything else. You know, I think wine's only about 1% of the alcohol consumption in India. But when you look at what that 1% is, it's a lot. So we've got to find a way to break in and be as big a part of that 1% as we possibly can. But you know, the culture is changing a lot in India. I think more Westerners are probably, you know, traveling to that part of the world now than ever before. You know, the hotel chains now are, you know, you've got 6-star hotels and probably, you know, 6 or 10 of them in every state in India, which obviously have high class restaurants and things, which is where you can sort of start to get your wine in to those places. But I've had some great help from my owners at the Delhi Capitals, actually, that own the Delhi International Airport. And obviously with international airports become duty-free shops, and that's where we sort of launched in the duty-free area in Delhi. So that's where we sort of started things off. And, you know, once we get the distribution right over there and we can start sort of breaking into that market and get some recognition, then, you know, that hopefully the sky's the limit in that part of the world for us.
Have you always been like business minded? So even as a player, and you know, once you start, you come into money and sort of like, you know, working out ways to invest or what to do. Has it always been something that's interested you when you were younger, or is it something that sort of developed over time?
No, it's definitely developed. I mean, when I was a young bloke, I was so single minded on just being the best cricketer that I could, and you know, and. But as your life goes on and, you know, things start to change and, you know, you meet someone, you settle down, you start about family, you got to start thinking about things in a different way. And, you know, then you end up with a manager or a management company who then it's their job to look after a lot of that stuff, you know, your business sort of side of things and let us as cricketers or athletes get on with worrying about what we have to worry about, which is at the end of the day getting out there and making runs or taking wickets. So it's only been, you know, I've been retired 10 years now. I've always had, you know, investments and things along the way. And Rana and I's other focus when I was playing was our charity foundation, which took up a lot of our work. So that was sort of, you know, we were raising a lot of money there for you know, sick young Australian kids battling cancer. And that was what most of our focus is on and still is. But, you know, now that I'm retired, we've got a bit more time to focus on some of our other business interests, and we're both avid wine drinkers and have enjoyed that journey down the wine track that we've come along.
And yes. Just to follow up, have you had like, I imagine, but if there are any that come to mind, like absurd, like your manager comes to you with like, hey, this person wants you to be the face of...
I literally just stole my question. That's right.
I'm pretty well protected by my management. I've been with James for a long time, and he's one of those guys. Well, he knows me inside out, and he knows the things that he can bothers coming to me with, and the things he doesn't bother coming to me with. And I'm sure there would have been some absolutely absurd ones over the year. Off the top of my head, I can't even think of one that is, as I said, I think he's sheltered me for most.
That's good management.
That is good.
That's good management, because there would have been some absolute shockers, I reckon.
Yeah.
How are the dogs running, mate?
Well, I think the last time I was on, I was promised you guys I might have been able to get us one.
We're waiting.
We're very patient. But
yeah, well, look, to be honest, I didn't want to let you down. I haven't had too many fast ones of late, so I didn't want to let you down with one that was too slow. So I've only to be honest, I've only got. I've only got four or five racing at the moment, but as we, you know, the litters of pups come around reasonably quickly. We'll be breeding again soon, and I'll make sure I keep you boys in mind.
Please keep us in mind. We this is not a joke. We are 100% down. If there's any way we can find ourselves a pup, a pooch, fast would be great.
Fast is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It can look fast.
Yeah.
Even if it looks fast.
Well, look, they're all fast. If you go and stand beside them, you're chasing, they're all fast until you get them in a field with seven others, and there's seven others that are faster than yours, then that's not much fun, trust me.
No. Well, we might just have to take it down the grades, you know what I mean? Start at the very bottom.
Yeah, work our way up.
Like Geary Racing or something, you know what I mean? Something really slow.
Yeah, happy with that.
I wouldn't do that to you.
Thank you. But anyway, mate, keep us in mind, and we'll be waiting.
Yeah,
we'll
absolutely
be patiently waiting.
A couple more things before we let you go. I understand you've got a busy schedule, but Alyssa Healy recently has taken over as the captain of the women's side. Seems like sort of the natural choice there. How do you see how that's unfolded?
Yeah, that awesome. Really happy for Alyssa. I mean, she's done it when she's had a chance to captain in the past. She's done a really good job. Very experienced player, you know, on top of her own game, which is, I mean, they're the important things that when you're looking at leadership, you know, you've got to have someone that you know is playing well and can handle the big pressure moments. And, you know, some of the things that she's been able to do in Ashes series or in World Cup finals or whatever, you know, says that she's going to stand up under the most pressure. I know they've got a test coming up in India. I think she's actually, she'll be leading over there. So and if she needs any advice, I'm sure Mitch is going to be pretty happy. Mitch Starks will be pretty happy to pass on some advice to her if she needs any. But
I feel like that advice should be coming the other way, right? Like you're looking at her career. I mean, she seems like the one that needs to be passing on to Mitch. Certainly from a captaincy perspective as well, right?
Yeah, wasn't there a famous quote of maybe a year ago about the Stark family or Stark Healy family, how Mitch might have been the worst performer out of all three of them. his brother being an Olympian or a Commonwealth Games medalist, and Alyssa doing what she was doing, and Starky was sort of stuck somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure how well that went down with the big fella.
But. No, I'm sure that didn't go down too well.
I think it would have gone down like a lead balloon, to be honest.
Will Pekoski, I mentioned before, there'd been all of the chat around, you know, he's obviously been in conversations every year around opening, and he's obviously had the well-documented sort of concussion issues, but just hadn't heard anything given the nature of the opening conversations this year.
Yeah, well, he's been back playing. He's been back playing for Victoria this season. And I'm not sure if he's played every Shield game. I'm pretty sure he might have missed one. But he's been back at the top of the order. Hasn't set the world on fire with the bat. I don't think he's made 100 this year yet, but he made a couple of promising starts. But I think the thing with Will, you know, and I'm just speaking as an absolute cricket fan, and, you know, I've had a little bit to do with him through his journey. Everyone just wishes and hopes that he can get back to where he was, you know, get back to opening the batting for Australia again, but more importantly, get back to being in really good health, you know, and not have these ongoing issues that he's had for the last 4 or 5 years now, you know, these concussion-related incidents that he's had. So I think that's the wish of everybody, because I think when we saw him on Test debut, I think we saw that there was a proper cricketer there that was just sort of waiting to explode on the world stage, and we haven't seen enough of that just yet. So we all go to bed at night with our fingers crossed and hoping that we'll wake up the next day and we see Pekoski out there making runs for Victoria.
Is he a victim of sort of a modern sort of insistence on taking head knocks really, really seriously, or is he sort of just like an anomaly in the fact that he's just had so many concussions, and off the back of that he's had some concussion related illnesses like you've mentioned? Was that sort of thing as common in your day, or is that sort of, are we seeing more of that now with a focus on concussions?
We're seeing more of it, there's no doubt about because there's more awareness of it, right? It's like all these things in society now, we're seeing more of them because everyone's talking about them and happy to talk about them, where, you know, 20 years ago, you know, it was weak to come out and talk about getting hit in the head or having some, you know, issues of getting hit in the head. You know, I mean, it's all heating up big time in the AFL. You know, I'm sure the rugby league's been the same. American sports are probably the leaders in all of it. But he, as far as cricket's concerned, he's very much an outlier. You know, his first real concussion was an Aussie rules concussion, I think, as a 15 or 16-year-old at in senior school. And I think as the story goes, he missed months of school. That's how bad his first ever concussion was. Okay. It might have been 4, 5, or 6 months he missed of school.
Wow, okay.
So it was a serious one. And then, you know, and unfortunately for him, he's copped, you know, enough blows along the way through his career that, and I'm sure it's, you know, and I don't know much enough about it, so I shouldn't be talking too much about it. But you know, from what I gather, every little knock you get, you know, it's just a sort of compounds the on top of itself and gets worse and worse along the way. But that's where I say we just hope and keep our fingers crossed that those days are somehow behind him and he can get a good run at it again.
Definitely. Now again. Time being of the essence here. We've been talking about, you know, classic catches. Obviously, summer, that's what it's all about. And you're seeing all the footage every this time of year comes up. Do you have a catch that you deem as either your greatest catch of all time or just maybe the greatest you've ever seen?
There's been a lot of great catches, and I was reminded of one last night actually, and I'm not sure if you guys can remember this, but Jordan Silk, who plays for the Sydney Sixers, took one at mid on at the Gabba. I'd just been building him up and talking about how good a fieldsman he was. He's the best fieldsman in the country, and he took one on the circle at mid on, one that was absolutely creamed. I think Craig Keyswetter was the batter, an overseas Englishman. Full strength to his left, took about 3 or 4 steps and dived to his non-preferred hand and took an absolute screamer. I mean, some of the ones you're seeing on the boundary line now have got to come into those great catches where you see guys – actually, I'm not sure if you guys saw the one the other night. John Wells took one at the SCG the other night that he was running full steam, 30 or 40 metres around the boundary, dived full length to his right, caught the ball, was going to fall over the rope, flicked it back in, obviously didn't count as a catch, but – you know, the athleticism we're seeing from the modern players as far as the outfield catching is concerned now is unbelievably good. So I don't look to...
No, that's all right. Look, you've seen a few in your time.
Ben Stokes in the World Cup in 2019, I reckon, had Edgbaston took one on the boundary where he ran in and then ran back and the ball was going back over his left shoulder and he dived back and behind him with his right hand and took it in his right hand and... NASA's commentary on that was pretty cool. That's probably as good an outfield catch as you can see.
Yeah.
Absolutely okay. Ridiculous.
Terrific. Now, you may remember last time, and this has obviously been a badge of honour for Eddie and myself, as we wrapped up our chat last time, we basically fulfilled boyhood dreams of taking on, you know, an Australian legend and captain in a coin toss, and we beat you. We actually beat you quite considerably, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I couldn't see the coin, by the way.
That's a fair point, but one that we will not acknowledge. You might edit that out. Tradition stipulates we got to go again. Another coin toss to round this thing out. And we're gentlemen, so we're going to allow you to call it in the air, but just want to make sure that you're willing and able and consenting to another coin toss.
Yeah, are we going 1, 3, 5? Best of
what? It's up to you.
We went 5 last time on your. That was on your say so. So if you want to go 5,
that must have been because I must have lost the first 2. So
I think you did.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see how we go this time. You can
So what was it last time? 5. Let's go to 5 again.
All right. Perfect. All right, perfect. Happy to do that. All right. Well, this is your call in the air. All right. You can see me. There's a bit of a delay, but
gotcha. Heads.
Tails.
Pick that up. All right.
It's tails. Punch in on that.
Yeah, that's a tail.
Well, if you boys had done your homework, you would have realised I would have called heads every time last time and you've come up with a double tail coin.
Tails never fails in New South Wales, Ricky. You should know better.
Heads.
Heads it is.
One run. Look out. Here we go.
He's coming home.
Here we go.
Heads.
Yeah, it's a head.
Oh, jeez.
It's a head.
Should have picked best.
I'll tell you something really funny. Going back, I'm not sure if we had this, if I told you this story last time as well, but the Indians, when you were over in the subcontinent, the Indians are so superstitious with anything like this, like a coin toss or, you know, the way that their bats are laying in their bag or how their gloves are drying on the boundary line. But certain Indian captains that you go to toss against, when you got out to toss, they would put the coin on top of their hand and put their other hand over the top of it like that, so you couldn't see what was facing up. Because they have this theory that whatever's facing up, it's going to come down the opposite. So they don't let you see what's actually
really.
So they cover it up. They cover it up with both hands and then throw it up from there. So,
wow. Well, in respect to the Indians, yeah. All right.
All right. 2-1.
Right, yeah, 2-1. Heads, this is for it. This
is for
it.
He's got it.
There you go. Well done. Well, that's one all.
It's one all.
It's one all. It's one all.
We'll get to the decider next time.
Do you know what the most you ever won in a row was?
No idea. No, but I probably lost more in a row than I won in a row.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time where you're like, Jesus Christ, like I need to win a toss here?
Oh, lots of times. Well, every time you went to the subcontinent, every time you went to India or somewhere like that, you wanted to win the tosses there because you knew that if you were batting last, that it was going to be hard work to win. There's also other tosses. You go out and you look at the pitch and you hope you don't win the toss because you've got a really big decision to make when the pitch is borderline bat and bowl, bat or bowl, when it's it's a bit moist and overhead conditions in England are sort of coming over, you sort of feel like you should bowl, but in your heart you think you probably should bat. They're the ones that you want to lose, and obviously, what happens then? You always win those ones.
Yeah,
so,
that's the way.
That's the way it goes, the way.
Mate. Thank you very much for your time again. It's always great to chat. Ponting Wines, is it pontingwines.com.au? Is that where people can go to get
sure,
the?
Sure is, mate.
Yep.
And we've got a code at the moment.
We do. We've got a discount code for the punter and the dribbler. It is dribbler, as always. The code is dribbler. I'll look up what the percentage is and I can
end. We'll put that in at the end. But pontingwines.com.au. Thank you, Ricky. All the best for the summer, mate. Appreciate your time and we'll talk again soon.
No worries, boys. And the only thing I've got here, next time we do this, we're doing it later in the afternoon so we actually can have a glass of wine.
Yeah, love it.
It's a great idea, mate.
Perfect.
Good on you, Ricky. Thanks,
all right, mate. Boys. Cheers. Thanks,
see you, mate.
Cheers.
Could you two just not talk anymore?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.